Hi, I'm Michelle. I'm an alcoholic. Can everybody hear me? Yay! Grateful to be here and grateful to be sober. I want to just get this out of the way. I was born and raised in New Orleans, Louisiana. I got sober when I was 22 in New Orleans in 1991. And so by the power of the program and the strength of my higher power, I've been able to enjoy a day at a time, 24 years of sobriety. And so if anyone's here struggling, it gets better. And all I had to do was, you know, follow directions. And speak up? Okay. All I had to do was follow directions, and that was just working the steps with a sponsor, being a member of a home group, and having a job, usually inside the home group, but sometimes outside of it. So that's out of the way. I also, so my April was really busy, my spring was really busy, and when I got the loving invitation to talk about this, I thought immediately, oh, this is so cool, I'll be speaking at the international convention, and it didn't really register with me what I was speaking on. And so a couple months ago, I was like, oh, I should check and see what the topic is. And so I looked at it, I was like, oh, no. And I told my husband, and he laughed. And I told my friends asked, and I told them, and they laughed. So I know my higher power has a sense of humor, and soon you'll see why. So I thought about the topic, start by forgiving. And I always like to think in terms of my experience and kind of start out when I was drinking. And truth be told, you know, that was not a world I lived in. Before I even picked up a drink, I was somebody living on the basis of unsatisfied demands. Everything was about, you know, what I was not getting from the world around me and from people around me. You know, I felt like I was owed, you know, and nobody was enough, and it kind of went from there. And by the time I picked up a drink, I think some people were relieved because I was somewhat tolerable. But soon that changed, too. My disease picked up super quick. I started drinking when I had my first drink, my first real drink, when I was 12 years old. It was at a Catholic school fair. So I hear people in Massachusetts talk about being Irish Catholic or Irish Catholic alcoholics or whatever it is. And so I have my thing about New Orleans Catholics. And you can get wine at your elementary school fair. Okay. So anyway, that was my drinking. And, you know, that was a great experience, felt whole, all that kind of good stuff. And then it quickly turned. And by the time I was graduating from high school, luckily I was graduating, I was a full-blown alcoholic who could have easily stopped and been fine, had I worked the program then. I was definitely at a point where I was powerless over the disease. But I didn't have the willingness, right? And so I had more drinking years in me. But I wanted to say that because I went through this period of time, even before I had a drink, of being a miserable human being. And it was all about what others had done to me. There was a brief interlude when alcohol was working in my life, when I was maybe okay to be around. But then soon thereafter, I was just horrible to be around. It became even worse about me. And because of drinking, I was willing to do things that I never was willing to do before. You know, the spiritual malady, I was willing to put everything I loved, who loved me, behind a drink. And that's the nature of it. So when I got sober, I had the gift of desperation. I came into the halls of AA. And again, I was who I was, but I was who I was without a drink, right? So it was this raw nerve. I was desperate and willing to stay sober, but it was still all about what I was not getting from the world. Still a sense of being entitled to something. And because I wasn't drinking, and I had a pink cloud for a while, but I'd get these terrible, like, nosebleeds, and I would start, you know, I'd be crying and all the stuff. And it was all about what I wasn't getting from the world and how my higher power hated me and all this other kind of stuff. And it was very dramatic and it was very 22. So I was blessed because I had fallen in with a group of young women there, and emphasis was put on working the steps early. And so I started working the steps, and I found relief. I developed a relationship with the higher power who solved all my problems, right? But that still, I had a lot of room to grow. And what I found in that was... For me, I know it's in the eighth step. And actually, you know what? Why don't I just read this real quick right now? All right. I'm going to read from the 12 and 12 from step 8. Steps 8 and 9 are concerned with personal relations. First, we take a look backward and try to discover where we have been at fault. Next, we make a vigorous attempt to repair the damage we have done. And third, having thus cleaned away the debris of the past, we consider how, with our newfound knowledge of ourselves, we may develop the best possible relations with every human being we know. This is a very large order. Now I'm going to skip ahead. This reopening of emotional wounds, some old and some perhaps forgotten, and some still painfully festering, will at first look like a purposeless and pointless piece of surgery. But if a willing start is made, then the great advantages of doing this will so quickly reveal themselves that the pain will be lessened as one obstacle after another melts away. And I wanted to read that so you had the hope side of it, right? These obstacles, however, are very real. The first and one of the most difficult has to do with forgiveness. So, when I did my first, I've done a lot of writing. I was taught that you write, you know, a lot. So, I wrote, and there's a kind of category of people who were on my fourth step, which was like, I made up the stuff, because it was all about me. And that's really the way it is for like 99.9% of them. And I'll explain that a little bit too. But basically, so when I looked at where I was selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid, I was freed of a lot of those resentments. I was freed of a lot of blame towards those people. And granted, a lot of those people were people who I was no longer in contact with. And so it's easy for me, if I don't have somebody who I see daily, to be forgiving, right? And it was easier for me to do amends. Those were my easy amends, you know? So I went into my eighth step with a number of people who I was ready to go with, you know? And so the forgiveness that I started with in my early sobriety, and there's a level of forgiveness that I experience today that's just based in the fact that I worked the program. That when I feel a resentment, I know that I can write my way to the other side of it. It's freeing. Sometimes I don't want to do the work. Sometimes, you know, that's recently. Recently, I didn't want to do the work, and I paid the price. And others paid the price. Let me be clear. and now for that point one. So let me put, I'm going to say it this way. All right. I had a friend of mine in high school whose parent was an unmedicated schizophrenic who had a very difficult childhood. She was a normal and happy person who's a member of the human family, great person, great person in high school with, very loving and generous towards me. I had a difficult parent, and it was just an excuse for me to drink. And I was not a happy and loving person. I did not seek to make the best of it, none of that. I was just an alcoholic and a very, very self-centered and negative one at that. When I looked at where I was selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid with this person, it was very difficult. I was not treated in a way somebody should be treated as a young child. And so looking at my part in it really amounted to how I used it to use that treatment to justify all kinds of behavior, to justify later stealing from that person, to justify not showing up for them, to justify how I treated others, in fact, even outside of that primary relationship. So I wanted to share that because just taking a look at the turnarounds toward that person didn't give me the immediate freedom that I experienced with that 99.9%. It was somebody that I had to deal with still. And there was a long journey. In the beginning of my sobriety, the best thing I could do to start by forgiving was to forgive from afar. I had to step out of this person's way. I also was taught that I was not a doormat. that I became responsible for myself and my well-being, which not only meant working the program to the best of my ability and taking care of my sobriety, but putting myself in safe situations with safe people. This was a very difficult decision. There were consequences, deep consequences, and with my family. However, it was something that I needed to do for myself. And I continued to work the program. My husband and I moved to Massachusetts, which was very difficult for me. I left my home. I was very resentful at Massachusetts. Resentful at God. Resentful at life. Resentful at living. You name it. And there was a lot of writing to be done. And, you know, I look back. I've now been in Massachusetts, 19 years. And the time flew by. And let me just say, sorry, Massachusetts. So anyway, I did my best. And I know that there have been times in my sobriety where I haven't done my best, like I said, because I haven't necessarily wanted to. But overall, I've been a participating member of AA for that time, and I've had some very difficult things in my life take place. And one of those things was being open to forgive. And I think that's the hardest part. And I think that's part of what step 8 is talking about. There were all kinds of amends that I was taught I could make. And just a shout out to whoever it was, and probably my first sponsor, I don't even know if she's here. I was taught that I do my 8th step with a sponsor. So I talked with her about each and every person on that list, and we talked about how I would make that amend. And then I also talked with her before I did the 9th step. Her favorite expression was, "You know you're willing to do the 8th step when you hear this," right? The knock on the door. So there wasn't a lot of emphasis working with her on feeling willing. It was more about just showing up and doing it. And that was helpful. You know, there were points in my sobriety where the actions I was taking a day at a time were pretty much all that was keeping me sober. You know, when I've had moments of feeling shut off from my higher power, it was the fact that I was still willing to do what I needed to do for my recovery, regardless how I felt. And I heard the expression, it doesn't matter how I'm feeling, it matters what I'm doing. So this person in my mind who I imagined early in my sobriety, having a vivid imagination of, like, with a automatic weapon or whatever, very hostile reaction to seeing this person or what I would do in their presence. I actually bought one of the boxing punching bags, and I was really into getting that anger out and stuff, and that was fine, and maybe that's what I needed to do. Something happened over the course of working the steps, and over the course of being a member of a home group, and over the course of being of service. And I have a friend of mine who I just heard recently share something that really touched my heart. He said, if you think about the steps, 6 minutes, if you think about the steps as a paint by numbers, you're selling yourself short. If you're thinking about it as if you just do these things like a checklist and you'll stay sober, you've missed it. He said what it is you work the steps that forms a relationship with a higher power that solves the problems, right? So I was working the steps, probably thinking a little bit of paint by numbers, thinking about my will, but having myself open enough to my higher power that things inside me changed. Right? And that's really what happened when I came into the halls. I didn't have a big consequence. Something inside me just changed. So it's not surprising that my relationship with forgiveness changed, especially with this person who I had felt had hurt me so deeply in a way that I could never forgive. And what happened was the person got sick. And I went from being someone who was never going to go to that person's deathbed to somebody who was willing to do that. I know that is not the choice that is right for everybody. Let me just say, for me, that was a change in my heart, and I was willing to do it. And I've got to say, to be able to show up for somebody and have nothing but forgiveness in my heart was a true gift from my higher power. And all that I had to do was follow directions. I don't understand this idea of, let me generate my own feelings and then I'll get to work. You know, I was taught that I don't think myself into right action. I act myself into right thinking, and in this case, right feeling. For me, I feel like being able to show up not only mended a situation for my family, it mended a situation for me. It mended a situation for this other person who in all likelihood was doing the best they could and didn't know how to do any better. And so I guess that's kind of like where I am with forgiveness. I worry less about how I'm feeling, more about what I'm doing. And let me tell you, I can still get caught up in that. I've been shown incredible generosity and graciousness from people who I have harmed. I had a busy spring, and after spring, I lost my mind a little bit. I didn't want to do the work. I was like a petulant child, right? We get older, but we get bigger, but not older, right? Is that the expression? And I ended up hurting somebody, and it took me, sad to say, it took me a while to realize the harm I had done. And to reach out and make amends. And I am surprised every time how much I get shown by others how to forgive. And I'm thinking maybe one day this stubborn alcoholic who people laugh at when I told them that my topic was forgiveness because I am so stubborn and don't let go, maybe one day we'll be able to respond and treat people the way I've been treated. And that's all I have to share.
Thank you, Michelle. That was beautiful. And it made me remember that one of the biggest things that changed my life in sobriety was doing the steps the very first time on my biggest resentment. And what happened through that process was that that resentment for me turned into compassion and love. And just like I'm sure all of us here, I know when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I kept looking for that forgiveness button. Like, where is it? I don't know how to do this. And it was through the steps that I learned how to forgive myself and others. So thank you so much. Our next speaker is Billy. So I'd like to give her a warm welcome.
Wow. I'm Billy, and I'm an alcoholic. Yesterday we came in here and counted the seats. There are 3,600. And last night I thought, oh, well, half of them won't come. I'm really excited to be here, and I'm very, very honored. This is a great, great honor. And when I heard the title of my subject, I thought, wow, that doesn't follow me, because when I needed to forgive, I was full of rage, anger, and pain. And I was not thinking about forgiving, but I found out after working with this that when I start forgiving is when I start healing. And the best gift I ever gave to myself is the gift of forgiveness. Everything I give to myself. And I find out that it's a lifelong deal. I mean, I could talk for an hour and tell you all the people that I have to forgive. I forgive a lot. And the most thing I have to forgive is I have to forgive myself for not being perfect. And I remember Clancy used to speak about the women on Main Street who couldn't get sober because they couldn't get rid of their guilt. And guilt is a really big thing for me. It was 6 o'clock in the morning. The police were pounding on my door, banging on my door, and they told me that my 20-year-old son, Bobby, had been stabbed to death, that he was in a fight the night before, and that the other guy took a knife and stabbed him in the heart and lungs, and he was dead. And I couldn't believe it. I didn't want to believe it. I couldn't believe it. I wouldn't believe it. It was over Labor Day, and the coroner had his body until for 3 days. And I went up to the funeral home, and I looked, and I screamed, "Oh, my God, it's him." And it was a horrible, horrible time. There are no words to express the loss of your child, the sorrow of your child. There are just no words. And I couldn't breathe. You put so much of yourself into your child. It was horrible, horrible. That's when my drinking really, really escalated. And the police caught the murderer, and the murder trial was postponed and postponed and postponed for more than a year and a half. And I would go in and out of the courtroom, and I would look at that murderer, and he would strut in there with a little smirk on his face and the hairbrush in his back jean pocket and his long ponytail, and I would hate him. I would hate him more and more and more with a total passion. It really was the most terrible time of my life. My heart was broken, and I got over it, but I'll never get through it. That time took me to a lot of dark places, jail, DUIs, a lot of things that I'm really, really ashamed of. My 16-year-old daughter, Cindy, took care of me, and my 9-year-old daughter I sent to my friend's house. And it was actually her girlfriend's house. And I sent her there for 2 weeks, and I left her there for more than 2 years. And I was not capable of going to get her. I had a pain that was twisting in my heart, like that knife was stuck in my own heart, twisting and turning and twisting and turning. And I couldn't let go of that pain. I abandoned my daughter. I was a shameful mother. I embarrassed her. And, you know, I didn't really mean to do that with my kids. I love my kids, but I couldn't help it. It's the only way I could do it. About 4 years later, my daughter came home from a party. That same daughter that I sent to her friend's house came home from a party, and I was drunk, and I'll never forget the look on her face. Never forget it. And I always fight with my daughter when I'm drunk. And I was arguing and fighting with her, and she went to the phone, and she called a friend of the family, and she said, "Please come and help me. My mother is drunk again." I was blacked out, and she took me to the care unit. And the care unit, they said they could get us sober, but I had to be sick and tired of trying, sick and tired of failing, sick and tired of living like an animal. I had to be surrendered, defeated. I had to just be done. And I was done. I went to I came to Alcoholics Anonymous through that care unit, and I stayed. That was August the 26th, 1979, and I stayed because of love. I really stayed because of the love that I found here, the love, the safety I felt here. And I felt I'd been through so many places looking for that kind of love, and I hadn't been able to find it. But I know that love is the most powerful force on the universe, and that I had to learn how I had to do that is I had to learn how to love me so I could love you, so I could love my God. Right away, I got a sponsor. And this sponsor was a wonderful, wonderful lady. I really respected her. She understood my pain. She believed in my future, and she accepted me just like I was. And I loved being part of that group. But, you know, she, in those early months, I was just really full of a lot of pain because I refused to forgive. I refused to forgive that murderer, and she kept telling me that I was going to have to forgive the murderer of my son, and I was going to have to forgive the judicial system that gave that murderer 5 years in the penitentiary, and he was out in 2.5 years. And I was in such a rage. She would tell me that that resentment was going to kill me and that I was going to drink again possibly and that that murderer was spiritually sick and I would go around. It is never going to happen. I'm not going to forgive that murderer. And I went around. We had this great big Saturday night speaker meeting, and I went around that meeting telling all my friends about how crazy and how mean she was, that she thought that she thought I was going to forgive that murderer. Finally, somebody reminded me that when I was driving around out there in a blackout, I could have killed somebody. I didn't, but I could have. And so when I got that, I decided I'd go. So I went to my sponsor and I said, okay, I'm willing. I'm willing. Before I forget, I want to thank all my friends that came here too. Thank you. Anyway. So I told her, I'm willing, but I don't think I can do it. And she said, oh, yes, you can. She said, what I want you to do is make a decision to let go of that pain. I told you about that pain that I had in my heart, twisting knife, twisting and turning. Well, that's the pain I carried around all the time. And she told me I had to make a decision to let go of that pain. And I didn't want to let go of that pain because I thought that if I let go of that pain, that I would have nothing left of my son, that pain was all I had left of my son. So I went around and I made the decision. I took it back and made it and took it back. And I finally went to her and I said, this deal isn't working. She said, oh, yes, it is. She said, I want you now to go home and get down on your knees and ask that same higher power that relieved you of the compulsion and the obsession to drink alcohol to do the forgiveness for you. You can't forgive, but God can. I went home and I got down on my knees and I talked to my God. And by this time I had gotten a God. I'd been working the steps and I'd gotten a God and I talked to my God. And I didn't feel anything. I didn't see anything. I didn't hear anything. But I had this deep, deep knowingness. Just this deep knowingness that I was okay. And that I could forgive him, and that I was free, and that I did not have to carry that pain, anger, and rage around with me anymore, and that even if that murderer walked in, I could give him a hug. That does not mean that I agree with what he did. It does not mean that I would be his best friend. It does not mean that I would hang out with him, but I could give him a hug. And that was how death speaks to me, is to live in the now. You know, yesterday is gone and tomorrow is only a dream. And I know that right now is all I have. And when my head can go like that. And when I'm in the now, it doesn't do that. It's only when I'm here or here that my head goes crazy like that. So that was a good thing to find out. Anyway, I had to forgive the judicial system, too, and that was a lot different to do that. I did a lot of excuses not to go into be a jury duty person, and I made excuses until the court wouldn't give me any more excuses, and then I had to face it. And what I did is I did what that program teaches me, to face my fear and take my God and to walk into that courtroom. And that worked for me. I was free again with that. I talked to my sponsor about this God deal. And she told me to put it all up on the shelf. And when I was looking for that God. And I got sprayed and dunked and sprinkled in all kinds of religions. I was looking for something to fill up the empty, lonely, needy, so unworthy places way, 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 way down in here. But what I learned to do is I learned to trust my God. And I remember I used to follow Chuck C. around. for any of you that know Chuck C., and he said, faith is total and complete expectation that God will give you the direction and guidance you need for your life. And you know, he has. He always does. He did even here right now. Anyway, when I finished the steps, it was 3 o'clock in the morning and I was sick. I was terribly sick. I had 103 fever. I was really, 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 really scared, and I was alone. And it's the first time in my life I'd ever been alone. I always had a man or kids or somebody, but I was alone, and I was so scared. And I talked to God, and I asked God to wrap his spirit around me because I was so scared, and take care of me. And I had the same thing happen to me. I didn't feel anything. I didn't see anything. I didn't hear anything, but I had this deep knowingness that I was going to be okay, and that I have been all these years. I never had to be alone, and I never have had to be alone since then. Wow. My daughter Cindy. It's hard to talk about Cindy. When Cindy was 17 years old, she was hit by a car. Bilateral cerebral contusion, brainstem damage, fractured femur, major, major injuries in Portland, Oregon. I lived in California. And I could not get a plane out. It was Christmas Day, and I could not get a plane out for 2 days. And I got a plane, and she went there to Oregon and then brought her home by United Airlines. They bolted us for stretcher into first class, and I brought her home. And one day she woke up, and everything had to be reprogrammed, how to walk, how to talk, how to read. She didn't know anything that was left. And a few years after that, she got herself sober. And she was doing her fourth step, and she was doing her fourth step orally. She called me on the phone, and she said, Mom, why did you reject me? Why did you put me down? Why did you never, never acknowledge me? Why did you hit me down the stairs and beat me up? She said, what did I ever do to you to make you hate me so much? And I took a deep breath. And I said, you did nothing, Cindy. I was 20 years old. I was 8 months pregnant with you. I had 3 little babies, and I didn't want you. And I'm so, so sorry. I'm so sorry. Please, please forgive me. And Cindy was crying so hard that she hung up the phone. And I don't know, some months went by, and a few months went by. But right after that, I called my sponsor. And my sponsor said that I may have lost my daughter, but I gave her her freedom by telling her the truth. And so a few months later, I mean, I don't remember how many months, but a few months later, Cindy was working her fourth step, and she came to my house and she said, you know, I need to make my amends to you, Mother. She said, I used to be a rotten little kid, and what I did is I did everything to make you mad. And everything I could think of to irritate you and to get your attention. And she said, I'm so, so sorry. And I said, oh, I'm sorry too, Cindy. But the best thing she said is, I don't have to try to get your love anymore, Mom. I know you love me. 5 minutes, good. I know you love me. And we have a healed relationship. I live in Laughlin, Nevada now. She lives in California. Every day she calls me, sometimes 2 days, two times. Good night, Mama, she says. And forgiveness had come full cycle in my life. I was in a meeting a couple of days after that happened, and forgive me my trespasses as I forgive those who trespass against me. I wondered, would I be able to accept Cindy's forgiveness had I not forgiven the murderer? I don't think so. Forgiveness came full cycle. And my next forgiveness was Jana. Jana was the daughter that I sent to that house, and she came home and I dumped her off, and that was the beginning of 25 years of her never staying at her house, never coming on holidays, talking to my sisters and all my friends, and anyone had listened, tell them how I abandoned her, how I embarrassed her, how I left her, and what a horrible, horrible, horrible mother I was. I made 3 amends to her that I can remember. I could have made more. One of them was I said, I did the best I could. And she said, the best you could wasn't good enough. But what I did is I stayed sober. I was a good example. I gave them money and cards and called them, and 25 years I did everything. And when I was 25 years sober, she forgave me. And I don't know why. I have no idea why. And I don't care why. Forgiveness again came full cycle in my life. My husband, Bob, he got sober the same time I did, but he wrote his own prescriptions. He was a little pediatrician doctor, and he wrote his own prescriptions. And he was going on the table for an angioplasty. And he got up in the morning, and he medicated himself. He went down to the hospital, and they medicated him, and they put the tubes down. They pulled the tubes out, and he died on the table. And I had had a new sponsor who had me writing this inventory about all the men in my life and what my part was. Big deal, my part was. What I did is I took that inventory and I went down to the funeral home and I made arrangements for the funeral and I pulled a chair up next to the casket and I read to him how sorry I was that I wasn't the wife that he wanted me to be. How sorry I was that I was such a crab. That's a nice word for what I was. What I used to do is, this is what I used to do. The telephone would ring and I go, first of all, I'd be running around at him, and then the telephone would ring. It'd be some neighbor down the street that I hardly know. Oh, hello, how are you today? So nice to this neighbor that I hardly even know. And now I'm never, ever going to get the chance, never going to get the chance to be best friends. And that's what we both wanted, to be best friends. We had a relationship like passing in the night, it was. And we both wanted to be best friends, be good, close, intimate relationships, but we just didn't know how. We didn't know how to do it. And my life, I went to Al-Anon, and I had 5 drug-addicted or alcoholic children. And they all got sober when I stopped enabling them to death. Can you believe that? Yes, I'm sure you can. I have a really amazing, amazing life. I sponsor a lot of women, or we sponsor each other, especially these days. My sponsor retired. Is that up? My time's up? A minute. Okay. My sponsor retired, so we sponsor each other. Anyway, today when I ask my God to forgive me, he says to me very quietly, you are forgiven. And forgiveness is the way to the peace and the serenity that I was looking for in the bottle all those years. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Billy. someone gave me an announcement for assisted listening device channels. The channel is 103.0. And our next speaker is Kevin F.
Hi, everyone. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Kevin. It's a real privilege to be here today. And one of the beautiful things about Alcoholics Anonymous is that, you know, we all travel different roads to get here. It's the diversity in our stories and coming here and hearing people speak. It's just wonderful. Wow, you guys are a good-looking group. And I am having so much fun so far this weekend. How about y'all? So, I just found out a short while ago I was going to do this. So let me tell you a little bit about myself. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April 21st, 2003. My home group is the Honest, Open, and Free group in Tucson, Arizona. And when I came here and I saw you guys, I felt, what have I got myself into? Really? You poor guys got to go to the meetings all the time? I would sit in the back of the room, and I'd say to myself, there's no way. I just wanted to come here and get my stuff back. That's what I wanted. I had no intention on sticking around. I needed a little break. I needed to slow down so I could get it back together and get back out there. And so that didn't really work too well, you know? That didn't work too well for me. I was at my house one day, and I was crawling around on my hands and knees. My heart was pounding, and I was sweating profusely. And something came to me. I don't know where it came from. But it cracked into this alcoholic brain, and it said, you're powerless. And my life changed after that, you know. My life changed after I admitted I was powerless. And I went back to the meetings. And I got a sponsor. I used to sit all the way in the back. And in my home group, they call the back row death row. I was on death row, you know. And this really rather large figure named James, he used to tour the back of the room. And he's a wonderful guy. And he stuck his hand out and he said, welcome. And this is always kind of hard. I said, James, my name is Kevin. I'm going to die. I need help. And so James helped me. He took me through the steps, got me into the home group. And, my life has never been the same. Forgiveness, talking about forgiveness. I'm just sitting thinking and listening to the stories and forgiveness for me really started, starting with forgiveness, when I think of that, starting with forgiveness, for me, that's the starting of my spiritual awakening. It was a spiritual awakening for me to admit that I was powerless over alcohol, of course, and to ask for help. But when I sat down with my sponsor and started working on my four step, and I saw how clearly and badly I had treated people in my life. Immediately, something changed inside of me. And it was in that process of the fourth step. So before I had come into the program, I was still out there, and I got a phone call one day, and I picked up the phone. And there was this voice on the other end. And this voice said, I think I'm your sister. And I said, I don't have a sister. And she says, no, I think I'm your sister. Well, long story short, I found out shortly before I came into the program that I had six other siblings I didn't know about. They were all put up for adoption. And they're all from the same mother with five different men. And, did that intensify my resentment against my mom. It was like throwing gasoline on a fire. And so Today, I have relationships with all these, except from one of my sisters passed away. Part of it was from this disease. So when I was drinking and I met all those guys, it was like, yeah, wow, the party's on. This is great, you know, and it didn't really affect me. I didn't know the gravity of what all that meant until I got sober and I'd slowed down a little enough to really think about what my mom had to go through and really what kind of a life she had to go through to have that happen. So working through the four step on that and working with my sponsor, I really kind of looked at, like we all do, hopefully, that how did I treat people? What did I do? And I wouldn't say it was easy. I thought I had forgiven her. And I was in my office one day and I got a phone call, and it was from one of my siblings, and she said, "Oh yeah, you know, mom, she wants to go to Al-Anon because my response to that was, she wants to go to Al-Anon. She's the reason why I'm an alcoholic." Right? I was pretty new. So I thought I had worked through the resentment, but obviously I didn't. So, how my life has changed so much through forgiveness of my mom. You know, I mean, you know, we have mommy issues, you know? Core issues that go, you know, really far back. We're really poor kids growing up in Chicago, you know, no electricity, turned off several times, you know. And, you know, I developed resentments of all this stuff, and they just built up and built up and built up and built up because I had no tools to get rid of them. I never knew what forgiveness was. And what I found out in my experience really through all this is that when I was really get to the point where I was able to forgive my mom, that really started the ball rolling on everything. You know, I feel like our program is really, it's all about relationships. It's what it's all about. It's about how we interact with other human beings. And I feel if I'm harboring resentment towards anybody, I'm just not spiritually fit. And it takes time. It took time for me to get there. And what I realized today is my mom is still with us. She's elderly. I talk to her on the phone every day. And, we had her with us last week for a week, and I tell her I love her every day. And what the love that I give her is the love that I receive. And this is how the forgiveness works for me. What I give is what I receive. And I feel it works in all relationships. It's freedom, like somebody else was saying, it's a true freedom, a freedom and a happiness. And, trying to help other people with that, you know, that's my primary purpose today, is God has given me this gift. I mean, I couldn't do this on my own. With the help of you guys and learning how to pray and learning how to, work the 11th step and the 10th step and passing it on to others has really been just the most remarkable thing. I'd like to say that that this conference has been just a huge awakening for me. I was at the conference last conference in San Antonio, and it was a big party and it was a lot of fun. But this has been a little bit different for me. It's a different feel. It's a different awakening. I think I'm a little more awake than I was 5 years ago. You know, and I'm able to absorb a little bit more. And I hope all you guys have a great time. And thank you for letting me share.